This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 12th, 2012, episode 544, brought to you in part by Fleeceworks, genuine merino wool saddle pads and accessories of top quality design, timeless style, and superior performance. Horses in the Morning is live Monday and Wednesday and Friday, so today we bring you a highlight podcast from the Horse Radio Network. Stable Scoop welcomes Amber Mathewson from Whispering Rains Farm in South Africa to reveal what it's like to live with lions and other amazing stories about horsemanship in Africa. Plus, monthly special social media report takes on videos and Tack and Habit snoops, so be prepared to exercise your laugh muscles. Let's hear from our sponsor, Fleeceworks, and then it's on with the show. And Judy, it looks like you've got something for everybody in here.
You know, we do. Our square pad series is, it'll just take care of just about any kind of rider. We do it in the therawool, and we do it in our sheepskin. And all of the pads have the perfect balance technology, which means it has the ability to use the front inserts or the full inserts or any of our back risers. In addition, we do all our inserts in foam or in the new wool. So it's quite an extensive group of choices. And the pads that we do is we do in the dressage, we do one in jumping or close contact, and then we do one in cross country. And each one's a little bit different. The dressage square pad is the longest pad in the industry from pole to croup, per se. So along that top line, it is the longest pad that's made in the industry. So many dressage riders told me that the pads just weren't quite long enough for the new saddle. So we made that adjustment. And then the jumping pad is, once again, one of the longest ones in the industry. And the cross country is a little bit unique. And then what we've done is taking the jump in, and we modified the cut a little bit so that there's less pad on the horse. We did, however, leave just enough back by the cantle of the saddle so people can put their barn logos or their sponsor logos on it. We didn't want to leave that very important phase out.
Oh, absolutely. You've got to have your brand on there, your colors on there, your favorite patch on there. That's part of the fun, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then the reason we did both is because some people still prefer the sheepskin. So we've got the sheepskin available, and then also the therawool. And the therawool is a little bit of a different price point, not so much because it's not good Fleeceworks quality, but it's a different raw material. Because we can do multiple shearings off the same sheep, it comes in significantly less than the sheepskin. And then it is a little bit more washable. I think people have preferred that because it's a little bit easier to take care of.
Thank you once again, Judy, for stopping by. When you folks go into your local tack stores, make sure you ask for Fleeceworks sheepskin saddle pads and Fleeceworks therawool saddle pads. And if they don't have them, you need to get a hold of Judy. She can be found over there at fleeceworks.com.
Welcome to the Stable Scoop, with weekly shows delivered right to you. With Helena and Glenn the Geek, live from the stable, it's every week. They're bringing the news through hail or high water, while using their tails as their own fly swatters. So sit on down and laugh till you're pooped, cause it's time again for Stable Scoop. Stable Scoop. Stable Scoop. Stable Scoop.
I'm Glenn the Geek.
And I'm Helena B. And you're listening to the Stable Scoop radio show on the Horse Radio Network. I'm laughing because this is the second take on that. And I don't know how many times have we said that opening line? And
I know, 1,000. It seems like.
And I think I've messed it up like 999 times. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Stable Scoop.
We hope you all had a terrific Thanksgiving and that you're now plowing ahead to Christmas here. We are going around the world today. We have guests from all over the place, including one coming to us all the way from South Africa. So we have three guests, actually, today. We're just going to hop right into it, I think, because we got so much to talk about. We have our usual monthly social media report with Jamie Clark of Yellow Barn Media. And then we're joined by Amber Mathewson of Whispering Rain Farms, and that is in South Africa. We're going to talk to her about how she ended up there and what it's like to live in South Africa with all the wild animals. We have our helmet series, and also we have a tack and habit pick for you this week. So we just have a whole lot to do in an hour.
Yeah, we better go pee now.
Okay. Well, let's get started. Let's just go right into our monthly social media report with Jamie Clark from Yellow Barn Media. Well, hi, Jamie, and welcome back to the Stable Scoop Show.
Hi, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
What are we talking about this month?
We are going to be talking about video marketing and video blogging.
Ah, see, now this scares me to death because I definitely have a face for radio. I'm in the right job.
Well, we're gonna talk today a little bit about what it is and why we should use it as we market for our business.
Okay.
And really, in its simplest form, video marketing is really just creating a promotional video for your product or your service and uploading it to the internet.
Okay.
And so it's pretty simple, but it does scare a lot of people. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. And these videos, Glenn, can be shared on your website, on your social media sites, and more importantly, they can be shared with other businesses to cross-promote your product to their audience. So, you know, if you have videos promoting your product or service and they've got videos promoting their product or service, you really can help build each other's businesses by sharing with like-minded businesses as well.
Now, what makes a good video? You know, there's lots of crappy videos out there, and some are too long. You know, what really makes a good, effective marketing video?
Well, I think really as far as that goes, as far as it being effective, if you're talking about a promotional video for your business to share exactly what your business has to offer and your passion and vision behind that, you know, something between 1 and 3 minutes is a good thing to go by as far as time, because we all know we live in a very busy world and most of us, we just don't have a lot of time. So we need to make it exciting. We need to capture their attention, you know, within 1 to 3 minutes. And I do recommend, and I'm going to talk about, what I recommend for any business, no matter what you do, is have at least one professional video for your business.
Professional. Good. I'm glad you used the word professional because, you know, my hand shakes a lot. do you get that? I mean, that's one of the things that I notice when you're really trying to gain information from a video, you're not just, you know, really that's the point is the person who's making the video is trying to share this information, but it's hard to focus on it when there's movement, when, you know, basically when an amateur does it. So I just cut you off, but I just wanted to say that it's important. I think it's important as well to have the professional imagery. How do you get that? How do you go out and find somebody who does that, especially for horses, someone who understands horses?
Well, there are a few. I'm personally connected with a few individuals that are really into the horse industry that are great at what they do. And, of course, they'll travel. And, you know, you'll have to pay for that travel to have your video done. But what I recommend is, and I'm happy to help anyone with this, too, because all of us have really good connections. But it's great to find someone in the horse industry that can do your video. However, a good video company knows what to do, what questions to ask, and they can produce a video no matter if you are a bowling champion or you ride horses. You know, so whatever you do, a good video company can truly capture exactly what your mission and vision is. And a good video company, this is what I like about having one professionally done, is that they will tell you where to stand, where the light is good, what to say, when to stop, and then they take over after and edit it, and they make you look really good.
Like I do with you every week, Helena.
Exactly. I throw my hands up and say, indeed. I mean, there's so much that we want to do ourselves, partly because of budget, partly because we think we can, and partly because we feel like no one can really capture our business or our idea or our horse's movement quite the way we can. So it takes a fair amount of trust to turn that over to somebody else. So I guess that's the other thing, is you kind of have to feel comfortable.
Well, and I think what's important to know is this, and you what you just said makes total sense, because for any professional video I have had done for my business or myself, they have probably shot 30 minutes to an hour of footage, because obviously you make mistakes, you say things, your horse does something weird, you know, something crazy happens, and they take all of that and edit it down to 1 to 3 minutes. And if you're working with someone that is professional, that does this for a living, you're going to be able to make edits, and you're going to be able to say, you know, I don't really like how this looks. Can we try this? And then creatively you work together to make sure that the final product is exactly what you want. And a lot of people also, you had mentioned, you know, cost is a big thing. A lot of people say, well, I don't have $5,000 for a professionally edited video. Start where you can. There are, so I work with a very local company here in Michigan, and they charge about $350 for a video. And they're very, very good at what they do. They don't have 20 years of experience, but if you look at my website, they did my video, and most people that see it love it. So there are definitely, it's definitely an investment in your company, for sure. And yes, of course, you can pay someone $5,000 or $10,000 to do a series of videos for you, and that's definitely worth it as well. But what I recommend is at least invest in yourself and your company enough to have one video done that's professional. And then here's my absolute favorite thing to do. Now, keep in mind, I love being behind the camera. And I mean, in front of the camera, I should say. Most people don't. Most people have a fear of public speaking, or they don't want to be filmed. But what I do for my business, I do video blogging. And so I have my one or two professional videos that can show someone what I do, you know, on my website and my social media. But then I do video blogging with my iPhone.
And you know, that's funny too, because who would have thought that years ago we'd be doing, you know, really high definition, good quality videos with our iPhones?
Exactly. Who would have thought you could get your internet on your phone?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's true.
And so with the video blogging, this is how simple it is. You know, whether you have an iPhone, a smartphone, or you have like a flip camera that has the video, any of those will work. Literally, I usually use my pony as my co-host. A lot of times in the winter, I'm even bundled up in my barn clothes. I might not even look that fantastic, but I'm in, you know, I'm in my environment. I'm in the environment of the people that I'm trying to reach, and I just press play, and I give a social media tip for the day or whatever it is that I want to share. I turn the camera off, and then with my iPhone, it will directly upload to YouTube. So while I'm doing chores or riding my horse, my video is uploading to YouTube. So time, it doesn't take a lot of time. It just takes a lot of practice if you're not used to doing it.
That's a good point, practice. Yeah, it's not that you can't do it. You just have to start it and then keep working at it until you get something that you like.
Yes. And,
or, you know, that works. Really, that's the end of the day. When you're like, you know, anybody who creates something, I don't know if you feel this way, you kind of, you keep at it until you like it. And then you say, okay, I'm done. That's my finished product. And depending on how creative and how obsessive you are, that process can go on forever. But that's a really good point, is just to keep at it. Like the first, for me, I'll pick up a little video camera or regular camera and I'm like, oh, that didn't come out right. I can't do this. Forget it. I totally suck at this. But you do get better if you keep practicing it.
Well, and I think this is my encouragement to everyone out there that says, because I hear this all the time, Jamie, I don't want to be on camera. I'm not made to be recorded. That's not me. But here's the thing. If you're doing what you love, whatever, you know, whether you're promoting a product or a service, you have a passion for that. And it doesn't matter if you don't look super polished and you are not someone that's going to go on the nightly news as a career. If you can just show that you're passionate, people, that's what people want to see. I have honestly had people call me and say, I just watched your video. I want to hire you. And it still to this day floors me because they don't know me. But because they really felt the passion for what I do through my video, they want to hire me. you know, or at least have a further conversation with me. So I just would encourage people, just try it, because the world needs what your business has to offer. And this is just one more way to really get that out there.
You can see that video that Jamie's talking about by going to yellowbarnmedia.com. That's yellowbarnmedia.com, and you'll see the video right there on our homepage, as well as the rest of the information on her website. If you want to get a hold of Jamie, that's a good way to do it. As well as on your homepage, like any good marketing person, you have your Facebook, your Twitter, your LinkedIn, your YouTube, and everything listed right there.
Yes, sir.
Very good. Well, thank you, Jamie. We appreciate you joining us again. Helena, I'm very excited. I found this next guest on Facebook. I don't know why. I think she was a listener and friended me on Facebook. And I've been following your posts ever since. And I've just been saying, you know, we got to get her on the show. We finally did. She lives in South Africa, and she's always posting these pictures of these wild animals in her backyard. And she's driving down the road, and there's a giraffe crossing the road. And, you know, she works with horses over there. And I said, you got to come on the show and tell us what it's like to live in the wilds of South Africa. So we got her on, and she agreed to do the interview today. And we managed to get a half-decent phone connection. So let's take a listen to Anver Mathewson from Whispering Rain Farms in South Africa right after this word from Draper Therapies. Hi, Glenn here from the Horse Radio Network, and I am back with Kat from Draper Therapies. What are we talking about this week?
Well, I thought I would bring back a year-round favorite of ours, which is the Draper Therapies socks.
My favorite. Woohoo!
Woohoo! Yeah, which is why I thought it would come up, because a lot of people end up buying the socks in the styles that we have available for gifts for the holidays. But regardless, it's a great gift to have year-round for yourself or for somebody else when you're not really sure what to get them. The socks themselves come in two styles. There's an active sock, which is a shorter sock that goes up just to the ankle. And then we also have a walking sock that comes in black or all white, and those go up mid-calf. So they're really great socks. They all have the Cellient technology in them, which helps to increase circulation and reduce pain. And what we've called them before is kind of an energy drink for your feet, in that they really help give you a little bit more pep in the step. And they take away some of the burn that you might feel, especially if you're on your feet all day, if you're training and you're on your feet, or if you're walking around, maybe doing a course walk, things like that. The socks are a huge, huge help.
And I can vouch for these, because you saved my butt at the WEG. My feet were killing me after walking all day, every day, for like 5 days at the WEG, and I had like 14 more days to go. And you gave me a couple pairs of these socks, and they saved me. I wore them every day after that, and my feet felt great. And about 3 days after I started wearing them, they were back to normal. And I'll tell you what, I have worn them ever since then.
They're really fabulous. I mean, I love them for myself, because even when we're at shows and things like that, or if I'm on my feet all day and, you know, you wake up the next morning and got pins and needles and it just hurts to walk when you get up. If you go to bed in these socks, it totally gets rid of that. Or if you wear them during the day, you don't get that feeling at the end of the day. So they're really, really fantastic items. And, you know, for either the $13 or the $15 you'd be spending on the socks, it's not a huge investment, just to try it out and see what kind of benefits you can get from it.
And they last forever. I am still wearing the ones you gave me at the World Equestrian Games. Now, I've gotten some more since then, but I'm still wearing those particular pairs. So they do last a long time. And they work. I highly recommend them. Terrific stocking stuffers for the holidays this year.
Absolutely. And you can find all of our information at drapertherapies.com.
Well, hello, Amber, and welcome from South Africa to the Stable Scoop Show.
Hey guys, I'm so glad to be here. So thanks for having me.
And by the way, thank you for being a listener. I know you listen to the shows, and that's really how we got in touch, was through Facebook. And I've been following you for a long time and seeing these amazing pictures that you keep posting. I said, I got to have her on the show to talk about all these wild animals that live in your backyard.
But it is amazing.
Tell us first about, where did you grow up? You have an accent that's all confused.
Yes, it is a very confused accent. I was born and raised in the South, in the Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, the tri-state area. And I'm now 33, I believe. And so I lived in the South all my life until March. And that's when we moved to South Africa.
And when did horses pop into your life?
I would say before I popped out of the womb, my mom was always a horse lover, and I was her excuse to get back into the horses. So since I've got photos of me being held on a horse when I was in diapers, and I got my first pony when I was six. And I don't think I've spent a day without a horse of my own since I was 6 years old.
Did you compete at all in any way?
I've done some low-level competitions, mainly for fun. My family never had a lot of money, so the horses that we had, we trained them to do what we wanted to do. And I would have one horse I would show in barrels, and then I would come out and change the saddle and then jump in to an English class and then do a jumping class and then a halter class. So the few horses that we had, we did a little bit of everything with them. It was more for fun. It wasn't really for the competition. It was more for the experience, the training, and the fun of it. So it was more enjoyable than all the competition and the depth of it.
That sounds familiar, Helena.
Yeah, very. And I never get tired of hearing it.
Right. So now you know, now you live in South Africa. How did you end up going from Tennessee to South Africa?
That's the $64 million question.
Yes.
That's a big leap. That's a big leap.
I'm sorry?
That's a big leap.
Yes. It's a huge. It was a big puddle to jump across. But long story short, I met my husband through skydiving, and we were set up on a blind date.
I met my husband through skydiving, and we were set up on a blind date. Which of those things is scarier?
Oh, really? It depends on which day you ask me and what kind of adrenaline mood I'm in at the moment.
Now, were you a skydiver, or was this your first time and you were both scared to death?
It was my very first time.
Oh, my.
It was my very first time. I went with a friend. Well, actually, it was kind of a blind date skydive with a guy that we were just going to be friends. And at the skydiving place, it was Skydive Alabama. They're rocking there. And they said, this guy used to work for us. He's from Africa. He lives in Florida now, but you would be perfect for him. You guys should hook up. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. And they did the same thing to him. And then they asked me, I went back a week later to just kind of watch and hang out. And I said, can we please put you guys in touch with each other? Because you guys would be so perfect for each other. I was like, okay, sure. So they put us in contact. Long story short, we talked for a month or so. And then I went down to meet him. And we've been together ever since. We dated long distance for 3 months. I would drive 12 hours to see him every weekend, and I got a job where he worked so I could afford to drive back and forth. So on the weekend, I would drive down, spend the weekend, work while I was there, see him an hour or two, come back, and then he moved closer, and I moved closer. Long story short, we got married about a year after that. So that's kind of how we met. So his family and everything still is in South Africa. He was born and raised in South Africa. And we came over here to meet his family before he proposed to me to make sure they approved. And luckily they did. So in the airplane on the way back to the States, he proposed. And then a year later, we came back and got married over here. And obviously still living in the States. And then we gave birth to our daughter and brought her over here to meet the family. And every single time I came here, a little piece of my heart and soul seemed to stay. We would go back, and it was like a piece of me never really came back with me. And every time I came, a bigger piece of me stayed. And I could just feel it in my heart that we were meant to live here one day. I just didn't know when, why, and how that was ever going to be possible. But knowing that his family was here would be a little easier, obviously. But it just kind of worked out. In October of last year, he came over for his dad's birthday party as a surprise. We couldn't afford to go. So my husband came over here for his dad's 60th and surprised him at his birthday. And his brothers offered him a spot in their business. They have a construction business here. And he said, you know, would you come over and be a part of the Matthewson Group construction? And he came back and talked to me about it. And I said, 100% yes. Everything fell into place. We signed a buyer for our house within 1 week without even putting it on the market. Everything fell into place. He was like, God said, okay, this is meant to be. I'm just going to go and line everything up for you, make it easy. Bam, there we are. So it's long story short, that's kind of how we got here.
Wow, amazing. And it sounds like a whirlwind, too, in a way.
Yeah. So, well,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, come on. She's not the type to sit back and take things easy.
Have you ever skydived since then, by the way?
I'll start the whirlwind. What are you talking about?
Have you ever skydived since then? Or was that the only time?
Well, I've done six altogether. The first one was when they told me about Jamie and my husband, and he just got out an instructor, so my next five jumps were with him. They're all tandems. I've never done a solo jump.
That was
so
it.
The next five.
That's tandem skydiving. That apparently, that's romantic, Helena.
It does, y'all. I've got a picture of our very first date that was taken from 10,000 feet with Florida underneath us, and we're just dangling in the sky. So that was our first date photograph.
That's something. So now, Africa, I see these amazing pictures on Facebook, which is one of the reasons I contacted you, of all of the animals, like in your backyard. You're always taking these pictures of elephants and giraffes and a lot of wild pigs for some reason, that you just see out where you live. So tell us about where you live and how amazing it is.
We're living in the Hoods Creek Wildlife Estate, and basically it's a gated estate. Which makes for added security, so you have a security gate to come through. And it's all paved roads where the houses are, and they have dirt roads to go off into the wilderness where most of the animals would live. It's not a big five place, so you don't have elephants in line in the estate where we are, or buffalo break in when they feel like it and come in there. But there are cheetahs and leopards that are there. And you can hear the lions roaring from our kitchen or our bedroom sometimes at night. So they're nearby, but they're not on the property. But the
okay, wait a minute. Helena's thinking the same thing, so we're going to stop you there. How many nights did it take you to get used to hearing lions roaring in the middle of the night?
Oh, I bet it would be, that would be easy. That's a nice sound, I think.
Yeah, some people even hear that they can't stand it, gives them the creeps. But it is the most wonderful feeling. I'm the kind of person, if it's a thunderstorm, I sleep better than on a quiet night.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's the most amazing feeling to lie in bed and hear that deep earth trembling roar of a lion to remind you how alive you are. It is the most amazing feeling. I lay there and goose pimples from my head to my toes and just smile, thanking God for putting me in this place.
I don't need to interview anybody else ever again. I will take that little segment and I will take it to sleep with me every night and hold it close to my heart, because there are people in this world, Amber, that is exactly what defines them. That those feelings that you take with you, that the earth sound and smell and sight, and a lion's roar represents the depth of that, you know?
Yes.
And I think it appeals to a very specific type of person. Glenn, it's not going to appeal to you. You're not a horse person. You're a horse husband.
I got to tell you, though, I'd be able to handle that better. We had a bobcat that lived near our first place. And when they're in heat, oh, my God, it sounds like somebody's torturing a baby. You know, it's awful sound.
Oh,
God.
You know, and it is an awful screeching, you know, menacing horror movie sound. It's a little different than a lion roaring, but
I'm
sure you get those kind of sounds too in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many amazing sounds that we hear on any given night. I've been hearing a lot of zebras. We don't call them zebras here. They're zebras.
Really?
A lot of times at night, I even hear the zebra. So technically, that's the proper way to say the word, but Americans say zebra instead, but they're actually zebra. So I got taught that really quick by everyone. I even hear the zebras at night, and they make the strangest sound. It doesn't sound like any kind of equine animal out there. We hear hyena all the time at night, and jackal real close as well. During the day, we hear also the warthogs. It's getting close to mating season, and all the little warthog babies, you've probably seen the warthog babies posted on my Facebook page. All the little warthog babies are running around, so now the moms are fighting over other moms, and the males are coming in waiting for the females to come and heat. So that's quite an interesting sound. And the impala, there's lots and lots of impala out, and when they're mating, it sounds like a cheetah choking on a warthog when they start making that noise when they're in rut. It's the strangest sound, I've ever heard, and I would try to mimic it if it wasn't too embarrassing for me to even try to make the noise. It's the craziest sound ever, the way they call for their mates. Weird.
Okay, Helena, ask her what she had for Thanksgiving dinner.
No.
Ask her. No, go ahead and ask her.
Oh, fine. Well, first of all, you did celebrate Thanksgiving. What did your Thanksgiving meal consist of?
We had ostrich for Thanksgiving.
Oh, and how does that taste?
It's actually amazing, and it does not taste like chicken at all.
Or turkey? Does it taste like turkey?
You know what? Chicken in the United States doesn't taste like chicken. It tastes like antibiotics. So, you know, let's go try some ostrich. Are they farm-raised or is it wild?
I didn't ask them where they came from. I just ate them. I'm sorry.
We don't ask.
That's fine. She was joking. We got them. Is afraid to ask where her meal came from. I don't blame you.
They were at the local Pick and Pay. They were already put on the kebabs, and they were marinated. So we bought them and brought them home, lit a fire in the braai. We don't barbecue here, we braai. So we lit a fire in the braai and put them on the braai. And we just had some cream potato. We had mashed taters. We had mashed taters and cream corn with it. So there's my southern accent coming back. We had some mashed taters and cream corn with our ostrich kebab. So it was definitely a southern South African style Thanksgiving.
I would try that for sure. I'd try that. I'd definitely try that. Now, tell us, too, you work and volunteer at a place that caught my interest as well, and Helena and I were talking about it a little bit. What is the African Dream Horse Safari?
Oh, it is amazing. It is right outside the gates of our wildlife estate, and they actually ride the horses in the wildlife estate, but they've got a wonderful setup with the dressage arena, jumping arena, and paddocks, and small training arenas, round pens, and stuff. And they actually take students from all around the world. They have a wonderful student program where a lot of kids will come on a gap year right after they graduate. Some kids will come during school, right after school, during their college university years. And they'll some spend a few weeks, some spend a few months, some may stay 6 months or a year. And they can take part in different programs. Some they might just be wanting to enjoy the horse experience more. Some they might be working on becoming a veterinarian. Also, some are going to be doing wildlife research. And the African Dream Horse Safari also has a game lodge nearby. So the students stay at the game lodge and they come to the horse safari daily with the owners. And they have all kinds of programs set up for them. It is amazing. So I've been really blessed to have the opportunity to help them and work with them and just be in the company of all the wonderful horses they have there. It's really wonderful.
Let me, Helena, let me read this to you. This is off their Facebook page at the African Dream Horse Safari. It says, "What a magic game drive with the students today. Started off with two brother cheetahs walking in front of us for about 30 minutes. As we carried on, we saw great general game and birds. Soon afterwards, we encountered a hyena sleeping on the road. Then he got up, stretched, and walked past us into the bushes. Just as the sun started to set, we drove past a breeding pair of buffalo and didn't stay long in order to get a good spot in the sunset." And, you know, what an amazing thing for those students that could get to go there.
Yeah.
It is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And now you help with the horses there?
Right now I'm giving Western riding lessons, and because everything they do is English, and they do dressage and jumping, and everything, all the saddles are English except for the trail saddles. It's kind of like an Australian type saddle that they use on the trails, where they just call them trail saddles. So they don't have any Western riding instructors, so I'm giving some Western riding lessons. And whenever a horse comes in that needs to be trained or needs a trainer, they will contact me or put me in touch with the owners. So I've done some training as well, and I really enjoy getting to train a horse in Africa, to be on their back when I see warthogs and impala and stuff like that for the first time. It's quite exciting. Taking them for swims in the dam, it's wonderful.
So you have some favorites. You've got some special creatures there living with you. in your little slice of heaven. Tell us about a very special one. Tell us about Trooper.
Oh, Trooper is, to me, very, very, very special. He is a Mustang from Nevada, and I got him through the Extreme Mustang Makeover Program. I took part in the Makeover Program in 2009. And long story short, right before I was going to turn in my application to apply for that, I found out that I had heart trouble, and I ended up in ICU for 3 days. And when I got out of ICU, and they thought that medication would kind of keep me sorted with my heart, I had an arrhythmia, the atrial fibrillation. And so I went ahead and turned in my application quickly and got accepted, so excited. And as I'm waiting to go pick up my Mustang, I start having more trouble. I'm in the hospitals again, and the medicine's not working. So they decided they're going to need to do surgery. Luckily, not open heart. They were able to do an ablation where they went in through my arteries and my groin. And that took place on July the 13th of 2009. And 5 days later, I went to pick up my Mustang. I still have my bandages on. I can't stand up straight. I'm walking hunched over. And I'm going to take part in the Mustang program. It's going to be an experience. We're going to keep him. I'm going to have him for the 90 days, take part in the competition. He's going to be auctioned off at the end, go to a great home. I've done something for the Mustangs. The Mustangs, I'm sure, will have taught me something by then. So it was going to be one of those things. I had to promise my husband that I will not fall in love. I knew I would, but that I would be okay to say goodbye. It's just like a horse that's been trained that belongs to someone else. I must be able to say goodbye at the end of the whole ordeal. So I agree to that. But when we go to fetch him, he's huge. He's 15'3" and a good 1,000 pounds when we go pick him up. And for a Mustang, that's pretty big. The average Mustang is around 14'2" and kind of small, slender build. But he was huge. There's definitely a draft horse in the wood pile somewhere with him. So my husband says, there's no way we're taking this Mustang home. He's going to tear everything we have. He's going to tear through you. And I said, no, that's the one that I was dealt. There must be a reason. Let's go ahead and take him. And there was a few guys there that were quite larger than myself that said, surely, don't you want to change? Don't you want to swap with me? Look at that little squirt over there that's mine. Don't you think that's more your style than for a swap? I said, nope, I'm taking my Mustang. So I named him Trooper after my cardiologist, Dr. Troop. So he got the name Trooper, and T-R-O-U-P-E-R. So we brought him home. 2 weeks later, my husband comes to me and he says, you realize we're going to have to figure out a way to keep this horse, don't you? And I was like, yeah, because we've already gotten a bond, just him being there. And just seeing a wild horse that didn't know where he was, didn't know what to do, but he was already looking to me as that guidance. And I worked with him for the 90 days. Some days I had to skip altogether because I just didn't have energy. Some days I might spend 5-10 minutes with him, and I'm too tired to continue, so I'll put him up. We had a lot of rain. There was 2-3 weeks straight where I couldn't even touch him to brush him because it was just raining constantly, and we didn't have anything covered for me to work with. So I'm keeping up with all the blogs of the other trainers, and they're like, I just finished with my 3-hour workout with my Mustang today. Tomorrow we're going to do 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours at night. And I'm thinking, oh, we're going to be creamed. I'm going to get there with this wild horse and everyone else going to have these perfectly trained horses. But in the long run, it ended up being the best thing ever because we had such a strong bond, a trust, that even though I was taking it so easy and the time I spent with him was so minimal, it was quality time. And we never took steps backwards, which I have a lot of horses. You take a few steps forward, and then you take a step backwards, and you take a few steps forward, and then you go backwards. We never went backwards. We seemed to always go ahead. And when I would put him out and we'd have a week of rain, when I flung him back down, and a week later, we were always where we left off. And he really was so special and touched my heart. But then we didn't have the money to even bid on him. So I started raising money. People were donating tack and old furniture and stuff. And I was having yard sales and trying to make a little bit of money. And then they told me about an incentive fund that they were going to award some of the trainers with. Up to 5 trainers, they were going to award up to $500. So to write a story on why you want to keep your Mustang, what will you do with your Mustang if you do, why do you need help, why can't you pay for it yourself, and stuff like that. So I just wrote a little story about me and Trooper and what we'd been through and our little journeys together, and how he really helped mend my broken heart when I would have just sat inside, didn't feel like going out. I wouldn't have wanted to really work with a horse because I just didn't have the energy. I did it because we had that bond. We had that relationship. It was so rewarding. So the night before the competition starts, they have the meeting with the trainers and tell her everything's going to go. And I said, okay, now we're going to announce the winners of the Don Lappin Trainer Incentive Fund. And they well, we have five. And they went through the list. I started out, so-and-so is going to get 200. Now we're going to give 300 away to so-and-so. Now we're going to get 400 away to so-and-so. And they list four names off, and then they've got one spot left. And I'm still just holding my fingers crossed and saying a little prayer. And they said, this next trainer story really touched our hearts, and we've decided that we're going to up the amount this time to help this trainer out because we really feel that they need to be able to keep their Mustang and stuff. And then I said, we've decided to give this trainer $800. And then they called my name out. And I couldn't speak. I couldn't do anything but cry and just say, thank you, God, for hearing my prayer, for helping this work out. So after the competition, we ended up tying for first in the body conditioning. And we took fifth in the in-hand competition. And in the riding portion, he came to a halt at one period of time. And it just didn't want to move forward. And I had thought about bringing a little crop in or something just to give him a little bit of a go, but I didn't. I left everything aside. I just wanted to be me and him. And he froze up on me for what seemed like eternity, but I think it was like 10 or 15 seconds. But that knocked us out of the running just a little bit. We ended up coming 17th in the riding portion. So all in all, we came 12th in the idols division, which was just too short of the top 10, or we just came back and did freestyle. But I think that's another prayer answer that I didn't know I was praying for, because if he went in the top 10, he would have been more noticed. People bid high on the top 10 horses because they remembered them more.
Right.
I think us staying out of the top 10 probably helped us to be able to get out without the bid getting too high. But long story short, when the auction took place, we ended up having just enough. The bid stopped with the 800 that they gave us and the money that I raised with the yard sales and stuff. We had just enough to take him home. If it had kept going, we wouldn't have been able to do it. We would have tried. We would have had to take a loan out, and we'd tried to make a plan, but we didn't know how at the moment. But it ended up being exactly what we needed. So he's been with me ever since. That was one of the hardest things, obviously, leaving my family.
Well, I was going to say, is he over there with you? Did he come with you, or is he still back?
No. Unfortunately, he's not. He's still in Alabama at my parents' farm. And slowly but surely, I'm trying to raise the money now to get him over here with me. But that may take 2 years. It may take 5 years. I don't know the plan for that. But I do know that he's never going to be sold. And I don't want him just sitting around and doing nothing. Well, he could visit my mom's forever, but I want him with me. You know, we belong together, so I'm going to do everything I can to get him here with me.
How's Trooper going to feel about the lions roaring at night?
I don't know exactly about that. He'll have to talk to the local horses to find out that it's actually not so bad.
He's a handsome guy, too.
He does have that wild nature.
He is handsome. I'm drooling a little bit. But, you know, when you know the backstory, it just sort of makes, you know, it makes things, I don't know. Love is blind.
But you're right. I mean, we'll post a picture.
You know,
he's handsome.
We'll post a picture in the show notes. He is a big guy. I mean, he's a big head and a big guy for a Mustang. When you first look at him, you wouldn't necessarily guess Mustang either.
No, you wouldn't at all. He wears a size 3 shoe, so that will give you a perspective of his size. Yes.
Wow.
He wears a size 3 shoe, and we had him weighed at on a proper equine scale in 2010. Like January of 2010 at the Alabama Horse Fair, we had him weighed on the proper scale, and he weighed in at 12,075 pounds.
You mean 1,200, I hope.
I'm sorry.
I know there are times when he's probably moving at a good clip that he feels like he's 12,000
pounds. Oh, yeah, that's a bit extreme, I say.
I was going to say, he won't have any problem with the elephants. He'll be right up there with them.
Yes, yeah, I've been walking elephants too much over here now, so yeah, I'm just got confused.
Well, there's a picture of somebody on a gray. There's a giraffe. It's on your Facebook page, and there's a giraffe, like, I don't know, maybe 20 feet away. And the horse is just, like, his head's down, and he's grazing, like, whatever, giraffes, I got it. I'm good.
Yes. I think that's Kika and Dave from the horse safari. I believe that's the picture you're speaking of.
Well, this has been terrific and a lot of fun. There's so much more we could talk to you about. We've run out of time, but, you know, there's so much more. I'm looking at our Facebook page. I think Helena is now, too, where we're seeing porcupines and, you know.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah.
All these critters, monkeys and all this stuff. Well, this has been a lot of fun. We wish you the best of luck in South Africa with everything, and also good luck in raising the funds to get Trooper over as well.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. And thanks so much for having me. It's been so enjoyable. And how awesome technology is these days that I'm standing in Hoedspruit, South Africa, and you guys are in the States and we're able to just chat on the phone so easily. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Amber Mathewson from Whispering Rain Farms in South Africa. So does that make you want to move there, Helena?
You know, it makes me want to. It does. I've never actually had a strong desire to go there and visit, but it makes me want to spend a couple of months. I don't know about permanently moving there, but I would like to go and dig my heels in and stay for a while. Yeah, for sure.
You want to go hang out at African Dream Horse Safari?
I do. I mean, it's scary. If I wasn't a mom, I could definitely see myself going there, falling in love with being a guide, and I
think your daughter would love it too. She's kind of the adventurous and loves animals and all that. So I think she'd love that too.
She would fit right in with those big cats. I'm telling you, she's got a thing. She really does. And she does. They represent so much. They represent so much. Well, yeah, maybe I would. I don't know. Living there, I don't know. But definitely.
Should we add it to when we get our big sponsor, should we add it to our traveling list and do a show
for sure? Oh, my God. I would go out knocking on doors to get a sponsorship just for that trip.
Yeah, that does sound like fun.
Yeah.
Well, now in cooperation with Charles Owen and Riders for Helmets, the Horse Radio Network presents a special holiday series called Giving the Gift of Safety, Purchasing a Helmet for Your Loved One at Christmas. And this is part four of that series. And we're going to hear from a woman who also was in the Extreme Mustang Makeover and until the age of 40 never wore a helmet. Let's see why she has changed her mind now. Glenda Geek here, founder of the Horse Radio Network. We are excited to bring you a special holiday helmet mini-series, Giving the Gift of Safety, Purchasing a Helmet for Your Loved Ones at Christmas. Today we hear the story of Anna Schaben, extreme Mustang makeover competitor and a non-helmet wearer her entire life. What changed her mind about helmets? We find out today. This series is sponsored by Charles Owen. When Charles Owen himself founded the company in 1911, his mission was to make products for a safer world. The incorporation of the latest technology in protection, fit, and ventilation allows you to focus on riding in the knowledge that your Charles Owen helmet will take the very best care of you. Safety, comfort, fit, all wrapped up in a helmet that is the epitome of style in each discipline. Why wait any longer? Nothing says you care more than the gift of a Charles Owen helmet for the holidays. There's a trained helmet fitter waiting in your local tack store, or you can find Charles Owen helmets at any of your favorite online tack outlets. Give the gift of safety and style this Christmas with Charles Owen. And now the story of Anna Schaben. Hi, Anna, and thank you for joining us today to tell your amazing story. Now, as I understand it from Lindsay at Riders for Helmets, you were not a helmet wearer originally.
No, I wasn't. I grew up in South Central Nebraska, and basically in that area, people just don't wear helmets. You know, we've kind of viewed them as that's what people who ride English use, and out here, you know, we use our horses for chasing cows and doing stuff like that, so we just never even think about buying a helmet or wearing one, and we really don't even have a place where you can get a helmet in this area. So, you know, I spent all my life not wearing a helmet until just recently.
And why did you start? What, you were in Extreme Mustang Makeover, as I understand it, right? You participated in that?
Yeah, I was in the Supreme Extreme Mustang Makeover, and Riders for Helmets sponsored a helmet incentive there, and it was $500 for the highest score who signed up for the program. And, you know, I saw the dollar signs. I was like, hey, how hard is it to wear a helmet? And maybe I can make some money doing it. I didn't have a helmet, so I talked to somebody who, well, it was Rebecca Bowman. And I talked to her, and she said she had one I could borrow. And I put it on for the competition. And I was actually, I didn't even ride for the competition. The part I was showing in was all in hand. So, I mean, it was kind of funny. You know, here I am, never wore a helmet, and I'm just leading a horse around, and I'm wearing a helmet. I know I have friends at home that kind of made fun of me, but they're like, I'm like, hey, I might make $500, so what the heck, you know?
It's worth it.
So, and I did actually win the $500.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and you know, I thought, well, that wasn't so bad. So, anyway, that was the first time I had ever worn a helmet in my life, and I'm almost 40 years old, so, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, just in this area, I'm probably one of the only people who wear a helmet just because it's so not seen.
It's just,
you
not
know,
the
only
it's
place
not
you can,
the fashion there.
Right. And the only place you can actually like buy a helmet, you know, you can get a cheap helmet, like at a tractor supply store.
Right.
But other than that, you can't really even buy helmets in this area. So, I just never came across, and I've been riding horses since I was 2 years old. Used to ride, you know, about 8 hours a day, and it was just something I never did. And I took a lot of spills, and, you know, a helmet could have probably definitely helped me along, not getting injured as much as I did. But anyway, after my Supreme Extreme Mustang Makeover, I came home, and I was training a horse for another Extreme Mustang Makeover. I'm in the Extreme Mustang Barrel Race. And I had just started riding my horse for that, and she had a little bit of buck to her. And one day I was out riding her on the trail, and she took a pretty good hop, and I ended up landing right on my head and ended up in the hospital getting x-rays, and I had a pretty good concussion. So after that, I borrowed one of my friend's helmets because the doctor basically told me, don't ride anymore until, you know, several months from now, until your brain can get a chance to heal. And I told her that that wasn't an option. And
typical horse yeah, girl there, you know, Anna.
Yeah, I know. She sounded like my chiropractor. I don't know. These people all tell me not to ride. And I told her, you know, I could maybe take like a couple of days off, but I wasn't going to like not ride at all. And she said, well, you know, if you can, you need to get a helmet and wear that. And so I thought, well, you know, had I not been in that Extreme Mustang Makeover and wore one for that incentive program, I probably would have just said, oh, forgive it, you know. But I really didn't think they were going to be comfortable, and I thought they would be, you know, hot. And just wearing one that little bit of time, I thought, oh, you know, it wasn't really that bad. And so I borrowed a helmet from my friend, and I ordered one online, and since then, I have been wearing a helmet every time I ride.
And now, have you found it? Now, has it gotten to the point yet where when you're putting it on, it's just, you don't even think about it anymore?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. The other day, I was riding, and I got done, and I didn't even realize I hadn't taken it off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and if you guys live, if people live in an area where it's hard to find helmets, there's great places you can get them online. You just have to measure your head and find, you know, one that's going to work for you. I know several of my friends now have started wearing helmets since I wear one.
Oh, you started, you know, a trend. And, well, congratulations for that.
Yeah. You know, well, when you live in an area and it's just nobody wears it and somebody might make fun of you, you know, when you see somebody else wearing one, then it's like, oh, well, if they're wearing one, I can wear one, and then they'll make fun of both of us. But
you know, it's so interesting that we have, most states have laws about wearing helmets when you ride your bike.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, people don't think twice about that anymore. You just put your helmet on, especially if, you know, like you're riding on the road, you put your helmet on and you go. And, you know, it's become the thing. And I think that's the same way. And what you just said, it's the same way with helmet wearing. When it becomes the thing, then nobody thinks about it anymore. Well, that's terrific. I obviously now a convert. And thank you. And congratulations, by the way, for helping protect your head, because you can only take so many. I'm sure your doctor told you this. You can only take so many bounces on your head before it becomes a serious problem.
Right. Well, and you know, like this week I'm in that Extreme Mustang barrel race. And, you know, if you ever watch barrel races, you don't see very many people wearing a helmet.
Nope.
It's just one of those things that I guarantee you, while I'm down there, I'm going to be wearing my helmet.
Well, good. And you're going to be setting an example for everybody else. And that's where it starts. I mean, it starts with one person. Somebody has to be the one to start it. And well, thank you, Anna, for being that one. We appreciate you joining us today. And best of luck. Best of luck at the barrel race.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you to Riders for Helmets for everything they do for helmet awareness and safety. You can visit them at riders4helmets.com. And thank you to Charles Owen. You can visit them at charlesowen.co.uk. And you can hear all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. Talk to you again next week.
This Tack and Habit segment is sponsored by Stable Comfort by ProMat.
Hey folks, Coach Jen here from the Horse Tip Daily Show. All of us as horsemen mull over our horses' nutrition and stress out over their stress level and fret about their fitness. But when is the last time you puzzled over your horse's lounging and sleeping comfort? Research has shown us over and over that quantity as well as quality of rest and sleep are crucial for top athletic performance as well as overall well-being. Enter Stable Comfort by ProMat. Astute horsemen everywhere have been trusting Stable Comfort by ProMat to provide unsurpassed comfort for their equine charges, as well as an efficient and economical stall flooring system that saves them both labor and bedding dollars. Still not sure? Well, here's what one of Stable Comfort by ProMat's customers has to say. When I built my first custom stables slightly more than 8 years ago, one of my greatest concerns was the stall mat selection. Frankly, I would rather have no stall mats than mats that constantly shift, tripping horses and requiring extra shavings to hide the problems in an attempt to make horses comfortable. And most of all, I dreaded the burden of having to move heavy mats and repack stall foundations. Mission accomplished, thanks to ProMat for delivering an excellent product. The horses love it because it is comfortable. I love it because it looks perfect, even after 8 years. We bed the stalls only as needed and use far less shavings than I ever could have had imagined. And it takes less time to clean the stalls when using less bedding. And that's from Ann Dewarge of Little Rock, Arkansas. But the accolades don't stop there. Head on over to StableComfort.com and find out why champions like Nick Skelton, Mary King, and Chris Cox use Stable Comfort by ProMat systems for their equine athletes.
Really interesting story today. It's a small story, but it's really a big story. We're going to talk to Marcia Hancock, who wrote a story called A Daughter's Remembrance. And it's not actually a story. It's more of a memoir. And it has to do with her relationship with her father and their rescue horse named Snoops. So we're going to have Marcia on, and she's going to tell us a little history behind the story and where we can find it.
Well, hi, Marcia. Thank you for joining us for our Tack and Habit segment. And, you know, we've had a lot of authors on the show over the years, and so many of the books have been so much fun, and a lot of them have been about the author's past, and yours is about that too, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's called A Daughter's Remembrance.
A Daughter's Remembrance, yes. It's a short recollection of my life with Snoops and the great impact he had on my relationship with myself and my father.
And so, okay, the relationship with your father. So this whole book isn't just about him bitching about how much it costs, right?
Well, actually, he did step in when the cost got to be a little much for me, because Snoops was a rescue horse, and he was quite emaciated when I bought him for only $100, a paper quarter horse for only $100. Mm-hmm. And it got very expensive for me, and he did step in and help out financially, and then he and Snoops just fell in love.
How old were you when Snoops came into your life?
I would say my late 20s, early 30s.
Oh, really?
About that time.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
And you were, have you been close, were you close with your dad the whole, your most of your life, or what was your relationship like before Snoops, and then how did it change after Snoops' arrival?
Oh, well, Snoops definitely was a bonding agent between myself and my dad. We were not close, but, you know, we kept in touch and loved each other and knew, lived separate lives, but Snoops actually brought us together. We had a shared experience I don't think we had had before, and it was a lot of time, that a one-on-one time with my dad when we would go riding together, especially trail running. Snoops was a great trail horse.
And what, tell us a little bit about what exactly is the book about? Is you know, how would you classify the book?
I would say a kind of a personal biography for any age group. It's the first in a series of stories. Snoops, although he was a mature rescue hope, he was quite the character, and was always getting into a lot of trouble. So he loved mares, and he was always putting himself out there to be. Yeah. So it's the first in a series of stories about my dad and Snoops and some of our adventures. And I thought it would be great to present how positive an impact a rescue horse can have on people's lives and how much value they bring into our lives.
And this is available how? Is it, it's a Kindle edition only at this point?
Right now it's an e-story, and what my plan is when I have three or four of the stories written and published on Amazon, is to publish them as one book. And okay. You can download it for Kindle. For Kindle Prime folks, it's free. And now iPad, if you don't have a Kindle and have an iPad, you can download Kindle onto your iPad for free and then download it from there.
And the Kindle purchase price is $1.99. I mean, this is probably one of the least expensive things we've ever done in Tack and Habit.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, if you don't, my daughter has a Nook, which is sort of, you know, the alternate version of the Kindle. And it's still very special when we download a story for her or something. It's a special thing. It's a nice little gift idea or something that you can share with your kid or someone you're close to. So,
And working with Amazon is a lot of fun. And the other thing is that it benefits 20% of the proceeds go to special horses. So you do help some rescue groups at the same time.
Well, that's terrific. Well, we're going to post a link to this on our Facebook page and also in our show notes at stablescoop.com. The book is called A Daughter's Remembrance. If you go onto Amazon and just type in A Daughter's Remembrance, the book will pop up. And you can download it, as we said, right there. And you know, I wish you luck in the rest of your chapters of your time here with the rescue. Those of us that have had rescues, you know, we've talked about rescues a lot here. You're absolutely right about how they affect your life.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for allowing me to share my story with your listeners, and thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Great. We're going to look forward to more from you.
Marcia Hancock.
Oh, well, thank you.
Marcia Hancock, A Daughter's Remembrance. Just look it up on Amazon. Well, thank you. That's something, you know, that's a little bit fun and very inexpensive that you can do for somebody in the holidays. And, you know, one of the things is this book isn't meant just for kids, although kids are apparently loving it, but it's for adults, too. And you know, I was surprised when she told us, weren't you expecting to say I was 12? When I got the rescue horse and my dad, not in the late 20s, and that whole thing makes it a little bit different, a different thing altogether.
Yeah, it's funny how your soul really doesn't age. You know, we just this story is relevant whether you're 12 or 20,
right?
Or 40 or 60. It's you know, there's always time for there's always room for horses to teach us how to be better friends, family members, you know, people. It doesn't matter what age you are.
And, you know, a lot of our audience listening right now is, you know, is in their 40s and just got back into horses or getting into horses for the first time when the kids are grown and now they're getting out to do their own thing. So
yeah.
I think they'll relate to this story a lot.
Agreed. Agreed. It's a good, I like it a lot, actually. A lot. I want more of it. But she says more is coming, so we'll keep our eyes open for Marcia Hancock, A Daughter's Remembrance.
Well, very good, Helena. That's about it. We had a jam-packed show full of a lot of guests today. And we'll be back again next week with another great show. For details about today's show, just go to stablescoop.com. We'll put all the links to all the guests and all of their links on there. That's just the easiest way. Any of the episodes you listen to, that's just the easiest way to go find them. And I had a listener write to us and ask about past episodes that she said there's only like 50 past episodes on iTunes, and that is correct. We're only allowed to put so many on iTunes. They limit that. So if you want more than the past 50 episodes, you want to go back and listen to episode number 1 or 10 or 50, you can do that on our website. That's the best way. Just go to stablescoop.com, find the episode you want. They're all there, and just take a listen, or you can download it and just load it onto your iPod or MP3 player that way. But that's the best way to listen to past episodes.
Mm. That's what I do. Because I do. I go back. It's the only way I can really. I have to download them chunks at a time so I can listen when I'm on a road trip.
Hey, let's give a plug, too, for my wife's show, which we don't do a lot, Horse Tip Daily.
Which is my favorite.
Yep. She's still doing Horse Tip Daily and putting out several tips a week. So you'll find those over at horsetipdaily.com. That's a short show. That's 5-10 minutes where we take some things that have come out on the other shows, and she does some original content for that. And she's over 720 tips over there. I mean, that's a lot.
I know. It's awesome. It's sometimes, and because it is my favorite show and it's the one that I make the most time to listen to. But if I'm on the road or something, I'm in my truck and driving, I'm listening, and I'm like, oh, I got to write that down, or I got to remember which episode that was, because when I get back to the barn, I have to re-listen to it, you know. So sometimes I wish that we had a little reference book of Horse Tip Daily tips.
Well, the one nice thing about that website is you can go on and do the search. And the search, you know, if you search for a specific word or topic, it'll bring it up.
There you go.
Plus, she categorizes everything. On the left side, there's a drop-down menu where she categorizes all the tips into different categories. So if you want tips about shoeing, you can just pull up shoeing, and it'll bring all the tips that have been done. So she is doing that on that website, and which makes it easier for you to find certain tips. If you want tips on horse massage, then you can just search massage, and it'll bring all the tips up that are about massage. Now, you can't do that on your MP3 player. You have to do that on the website. But very good. Well, thank you to our sponsors for this show as well, Draper Therapies, Charles Owen, and Stable Comfort by ProMat. As I said, we'll be back again next week, Helena.
With a heck of a lot more. Thanks for listening, and happy scooping.